Okay, good morning. So finally here. I hope it's going to work. My computer decided to reboot and I can connect it afterwards, so I'm going to use the other computer. Hopefully we're going to be fine with that. So this is going to be the database course. And Dipti and I, we're going to be sharing. These days with the GDPR, privacy is important, so just keep in mind that these lectures are going to be recorded, which means that our screen and our lectures and whatever we put on there will be recorded, but you will not be recorded. If there are questions, you are not going to be having a microphone, so we're not going to record your voice either. So if you're concerned about the privacy, then you could talk to us. This is the plan for the semester. Database course is a quite big one. It's not Dipti's fault, it's my design, and she's coming in and is lecturing parts of it. The reason why I like it to be this big is that as programmers, you would like not just to know about databases, SQL, modeling, but also to use it in a real application. And that's where we're going to start. So a little bit today, but mostly on Friday, we will be starting to talk a little bit about developing web-based application or database-based applications. And we're going to use a platform that includes the web. And for the next 3 weeks, we're going to be mostly working on how to develop applications using databases. And that is before you know how to design and how to create a database and how to get data from it, which is what Dipti is going to talk about, because after these 3 weeks, then Dipti will come in, talk about SQL, how to query databases, what is a relational database, the modeling, and database design. I don't know if you want to say something about it, Dipti?
So, thank you. So we will start with structured query language, which is a language for the relational database management system, and how to access the data we have stored inside the database, and how can we create our own databases. So that we are going to study in SQL, but we don't start actually making the database inside a computerized environment. So first we need a modeling. So first we need to check the design. We make the design and we check the design just like this in this building. We don't start making this building start in the starting. We first make a design on a paper or on a tool. And once we are sure that this design is correct, then we move towards making it in the computerized database. So that we are going to do in the data modeling part. And then we will convert it into relational model. We will talk about it when we will come to that particular week. And then finally, we will learn how to make the database in a relational database management system environment. And afterwards, Rune will take over again.
Yes, I will. And what we're going to do then is XML. XML is not typically part of a database course, but I chose to include it anyway, because an XML describes a hierarchical structure and hierarchical data. And you can say there are XML databases and there are document databases that are hierarchical as well. So I think it's beneficial for you to be familiar with hierarchical databases in which data is stored in a tree structure. We have a query language for hierarchical data that's called XPath, that is using that hierarchical structure. In the very end, Dipti is going to talk about concurrency control, meaning what if multiple users use the database at the same time? What may happen, and how can we avoid that users causing problems for each other? But before we start, anyone here with experience in databases? Nothing? little bit, some hands. Relational databases. Have any of you tried some MongoDB or some NoSQL databases? Not so much. Because this, we'll talk about it eventually, generations of databases. And what we talk about here are relational databases. That's the main focus. I do have some XML. And XML is, as I said, a hierarchical structure. And there are some new database systems that are not relational, that are based on hierarchical or graph models. And we'll not talk too much about it, a little bit, not too much. So that's something that you will have to learn yourself in the future. But I think that, or we think that the basis you get here will give you the general understanding what a database is, what services a database system will offer you, and query languages that are not just navigational, meaning that you don't just traverse data structures. What we'll do today is to first short intro to the course. Deputy and I are going to share it, although if you have something to complain about, it's usually my fault. So she's doing parts of it. We'll talk a little bit about databases and their use in applications as a system to kind of set the stage. We'll talk about database management systems, what these guys are. And we'll start saying a little bit about MySQL and PHP MyAdmin, which are some of the tools we're going to be using in this course. There are seats in here if you'd like to sit. If some of you scoop in, then the three guys in the stairs don't have to sit on the edge there. We will not be here on a regular basis, so there will be a little bit more room than what it is right here. But first, if you haven't already, then I suggest that you read the formal course description quite carefully. And what you'll find is that we have six assignments that are mandatory in the sense that you need five of the six approved. The textbook is the Connolly and Begg textbook. I should have brought it, but I forgot to. You could buy it in the bookstore, and there is a link on Blackboard where you can find it. And if you like a smaller and a quick and more enjoyable maybe intro, then you could go to the manga guide to databases. You may enjoy that as a supplement. Some of you, I'm sorry that we didn't cancel the Monday's lab hour, and some of you did show up. I'm sorry for that. What I said there is that if you have a database book already, or if you find an earlier edition of the Connolly Begg textbook, you could use it. What we're going to be covering is pretty standard database stuff, and there will be quite a few links to resources on the web that will support this. The only thing to remember then is that if you use another version, then the references to chapter numbers may not be correct. So, if there are references to exercise numbers, these might be different. Blackboard is our main resource center. I was thinking to show it on my computer, and since it broke, I don't want to mess up and try to get Blackboard up and running here. But you have been using Blackboard last year as well. Deepti and I, we are still fighting with Blackboard, getting to know how it works. And sometimes we're successful, sometimes we're not. So you need to give us a little bit of feedback on what we can do to make it better for you. But what we'll find on Blackboard is the lecture plan. So we will keep an update of the lectures, what we are going through, and if there are changes that likely may happen, we will update the lecture plan. In the lecture plan, you'll find links to learning material, links to web pages, links to tools you're going to use. You find the lecture notes. I did upload today's lecture notes there. Unfortunately, when I tested before I came here, it seems that you don't see all of it, so I'll need to talk to the Blackboard administrators to see what's wrong. But you will find the lecture notes there, and what I'm going to do is I will upload them at least before I come here in the morning or afternoon. So whenever we are here, the lecture notes are there. So you can bring them up if you want and have them on the side as you make notes yourself. Recordings. we are recorded here, and when I'm done today, I will put in the link, so you find links to the earlier recordings as well in Blackboard. And this is also where you find assignments, where you will submit your reports, and you can give us feedback, and you will get feedback from the teaching assistants on your assignments there. Any questions about this part? There's more boring administrative stuff. Oops. Exam. In this course, there is only the written exam. And there is always a discussion whether that's a good way of assessing your skills and your knowledge. But so far, that's what we're going to be doing. 5 hours, so it's going to be quite a lot of work there as well. We'll come back to the exam later on, but you find earlier exams also on Blackboard, so you could see how they're structured, and we pretty much keep in line with the last few years. You can see the structure, and at least that's not going to be a surprise. It might be a surprise what the modeling case is, might be a surprise what the database you actually get to work with, but at least the structure of the exam should be pretty stable. And 19th of December, so tight up to Christmas. As I said, assignments are important, so there are 3 time slots reserved in the labs. So, and not all 3 slots for all of you. I'm not quite sure why the engineering students got all 3 slots. Usually they will be all having the Thursday slot, but only 2 having these ones. But basically it doesn't matter. Because what matters is that these are available, and we divided it that way so that you don't have your calendar filled up with lab hours. So whichever you use, unless it's really full, which may happen just before a hand-in of an assignment, you can use either of them. But for making your calendar a bit nicer and not put up too many mandatory appointments there. They are all only 2 of them for most of the groups. Now, this is easy for me to say, easy for me to recommend, and you would say, oh, that's what I'm going to try as well. But by experience, we know that this is going to be hard, which is work evenly throughout these 2-week periods that you're going to see for each of the assignments. What's going to happen is that most of you will push it to the end. And then Wednesday, before you're going to hand in on Sunday, you're going to start working. And you find it's much more work than you anticipated. It's a bit harder than what you thought. And the teaching assistants are busy because everyone is talking to the teaching assistants there. So if you are smart, you start early. Right after handing in on Sunday, you start going to the Monday lab and get access to the TAs because the teaching assistants will not be busy. There won't be too many other students there. So then you get early help. I'm going to repeat this a couple of times. As I said, it's easy to say. It's a bit harder to live up to when you get into the middle of the semester and you would like to relax a week before you start working again. I have, earlier years, allowed students to work together but hand in individual reports. The bad thing there is that the TAs then have a lot of reports to give feedback to. And some of them are the same because students work together. But the TA will still have to work and give feedback to each one, which means that the feedback you get from the TA is not as good. So this year, you may sign up as a group, which up to 3, and work together as a group, and you submit as a group, and you get feedback as a group. Or you may work individually. Now, I don't know if this is the only way, but the best way I found on Blackboard to do this is that there are 2 sets of groups. You have a set of groups that are up to 3 members. Those who would like to work in groups, sign up for those groups and sign each one into the group. If you would like to work individually, there is a group called individual students, and you just sign in as an individual student. You would still need to enroll into a group, as far as I can understand Blackboard. So in the first couple of weeks, I suggested to go through that part. You enroll, you choose whether you're going to be a group with 3 members, 2 members, or you want to be by yourself. I don't know this for sure, but I think it's better for everyone to not try to change the groups during the course. I think it is quite hard to do in Blackboard, and I think it's going to mess up for everyone. So try to, if you decide to work by yourself, try to continue by yourself continuously. If you work, if you are as a group, I mean, if someone drops out, okay, we can remove from the group. But otherwise, try to find groups that you think you're going to be able to work with for the whole semester. If you are individuals, you could still work with some others. So it's not like if you are individual, you cannot collaborate. I think there's much to learn from discussing your ideas and working together. But in that case, be honest and tell us. Say in the report, I worked with these guys. This part we did jointly. So that we know and you are open on how you worked. That's okay. And I think it's good for learning to have someone to discuss with, but be open about it. You saw this already. This is pretty much the layout. This is not for this week, because it says 2 of 6, and we are here in 1/3 Eureka. So this is an exceptional week, but this is more of the standard week. Not every week is like this, as you'll see on the next slide. What I would like to say is that the most of the lab hours will be in A255. And as you guys showing up there on Monday found, the Wi-Fi is not very good there. So bring your own Ethernet cable and connect directly to the wire network. Because the Wi-Fi, you can't really rely on it. And you will be using network resources. So it's convenient to have a good network. And I should also say that the A254 is a regular classroom. I never had labs there before, so I don't know how it's going to work. So you just need to tell me or the TAs as soon as possible if you see there are problems with power, with network, with any infrastructure to make it working. And feel free to rearrange the room if you like to sit in groups or around one table, but put it back after 2 hours so that the next one coming in has a classroom in the regular setup. There are some, these are the basic weeks, but please note that there are some weeks where the lectures, I mean, this week we are in 1/3, we also going to be here in 47, and 45 we're going to be in S206. Oh, okay, that's going to be as a standard one. And then here for the labs, some of the labs will not be in A254 in the week 40 and the final weeks, but the final weeks, don't worry about them. You're not going to be too much in the lab, I think, anyway, those 2 final weeks. And then the lectures on these weeks, okay, they're going to be in the same place, sorry. But here we have. So just keep an eye on the calendar, because there are some weeks where we're not going to be where we get used to be. A couple of more slides on general info. We are going to be using MySQL and PHP MyAdmin. Anyone experienced with MySQL specifically? Yeah. 10, 15... Dipti and I have talked about it, and we may give you a questionnaire in a couple of weeks asking you about the technology platform, because then you have been using the technology in the first assignment, because for next year we are considering whether we should change the platform, and we would like to have your input on it. So in a couple of weeks we will probably give you a questionnaire, and I hope some of you will respond to it. For those who haven't used it, the first assignment is very much about setting up the environment and getting to play with it. And XAMPP is what I recommend for you to set it all up on your own computer. We'll come back to this later on. As I said, lectures will be recorded. And if you go to forelesninghig.no, you'll find the lectures. You probably find last year's and the years before as well, if you would like to see what we did before. Not so different. When we designed this assuming that you, since this is a 10-credit course, you should spend 15 hours per week on this course for the lectures, for the assignments, for reading yourself. So that's the estimate. So workload is going to be there. So if you complain about the workload, then look back at the last couple of weeks to see whether you have worked 15 hours per week. If you have, then tell us, because it shouldn't be more than 15 hours per week. But if you think it's a lot to do and you spend only 10 hours, then you still have a few hours to go. Quality assurance. The quality of this course is very much based on feedback we had from earlier students. So both Dipti and I will very much would like you to tell us if there's something that you think we could do better, if there's something that we should change, anything. Tell us here during the lectures or tell the TAs in the labs. But we also would like to have that student reference group. So we need one from each of the three groups, data engineering, information security, programming, one from each of them. And we have had this for 2 years, and I think those students who worked with us liked it, and we very much liked it. We learned a lot from talking to students. What it means is we're going to have three meetings through the semester. We're going to be meeting now quite early on, and we're going to have a meeting at the middle of the semester and then towards the end. And we're going to make notes and we're going to make changes based on the input. Usually the changes will be to the better for the next set of students. Like last year, the first assignment we started with the testing, and we got a lot of feedback from the students directly in the lab and through the reference groups that has made me change the way we do the testing this year. We have more time and we're going to spend more joint efforts on testing so that you get to understand it better than what last year's students did. So we could point out right now, but I think that I will give you a little bit of time. So by the end of this week, I would like each of the groups to find one, or if one says from each of the group they would like to join in, I will be happy to get your names. But other than that, I will bug you about it again by the end of the week. But for now, just talk about it. And it's important for Dipti and myself to have that group to talk to. And it's not a lot of work, but it is important work, I should say. It's not just for the formalities. We actually learned quite a lot from talking to the group, and we think that the course is improving by using the group. So, but that doesn't stop anyone to disagree with the ones there or give us the direct feedback. We welcome that very much as well. Okay, before going into the course, just a couple of comments about studying habits, and our underlying philosophy. Number one, you have to be active. I mean, you could decide to sit back and listen to us like it's a movie, or you can really look at this as a movie if you are home and just watch the video stream. But it's much better when you're active, making notes. And I have the lecture notes, or we will give you the lecture notes in advance. You don't have to write down what's on the lecture notes. Rather, write down your thoughts, your reflections, your ideas, what we say in addition to what's already on the lecture notes. The other thing is, in my mind, there was a researcher called David Kolb who looked at learning. How is learning, especially in this setting where we learn to do stuff and we develop something, and that is part of the learning. He's drawing a cycle, and I would like to reflect a little bit on it to help you understand how lectures and assignments and our exam, how it's kind of organized, how we're thinking about it. So typically, Kolb says that learning starts by the students having an experience of some sort. And in our case, it will be to a large degree the assignments, it will be the cases that Dipti and I will go through in the lectures. We will have a concrete case saying, okay, this is the case, this is the problem, now what do we need to do about it? So that is the kind of the starting point. We experience something, typically by doing, and then we need to observe and reflect on what we see. So we'll talk about, okay, what are the problems here we go into, and then we look at alternatives, and we reflect on alternatives, and we review the experience that we had. And for you to learn in our course, you need to invest a lot of time and effort into getting a concrete experience, meaning testing the queries, draw some models yourself, make some programs, try out XPath yourself, but also think about what did happen, why did it happen this way, what is the explanation, and to learn from it. And then the important thing is not to solve the individual modeling problems, not to solve the individual SQL queries, not to program that specific program, but is to solve a type of modeling. So what Dipti is going to try to help you learn is how you model, any problem. But the starting point is going to be one model. So to be able to generalize, make more abstract understanding is what we're aiming at. But this is hard. And you can only do that through a number of experiments and reflecting on them and trying to say what is common. We're going to do that, and unfortunately, we have been in this field for too long, and we have been working here too long, so for us, this is easy. For you, this is much harder, because you are lacking this first part. So bear with us, and tell us if we are rushing too fast, if you are assuming something that is not obvious to you. And then finally, active experimentation. So when you think you understand how SQL works like, then you should go and test it yourself. So besides all the assignments, all the cases, everything we do here, if you really want to learn, then you need to play with the system yourself. So that's why in this course we have set up many systems, or we are going to introduce many systems. The good thing with these systems is that you could play with them. You could use them for real if you have like last year, there was one student who was into Taekwondo, and he wanted to make a database for Taekwondo exercises. Great! Then you really get to experiment with what we have been talking about here. Does it fit with your understanding of how you learn? Very good. Then I think we could dismiss Dipti if you have any questions. Yeah, so we don't need. Yeah, let's see if you can show Blackboard. That's a good idea. You can just go in. But you are using Blackboard on a regular basis? Yeah. And hopefully it's a bit up to the lecturers how they structure Blackboard. And let's go into your, this is how it's going to look like for you. So, first, here are some announcements, and you can see that I already put up two announcements saying that one, assignment one is out, and two, this morning, that I've already changed it a little bit. Well, added something that I saw that I had forgotten, which may still happen. So tell me if you looked at the assignment and something is unclear, something seemed to be missing, something seemed to be wrong, just tell me and we'll fix it. Here, you have the groups. If you click on that one, you find that there are two sets of groups. This is if you would like to be two or three. And this is if you like to work as an individual. Unfortunately, the title here is a bit misleading. So join a group. I couldn't override the standard text there. So unfortunately, the individual is a one-person group. It's a very small group. But it's in this terminology, it's considered as a group. So choose either working alone or working with two other guys. So that was the front page. Now, if you go to the course information, this is not so much alive or so much updated. It says just a little bit about the course. Here you find a link to the course description. This is us. And there will be a document. It will be updated, but you can see last year's document that would list what I call the core topics. As you could see from the intro, we have quite a number of topics we go through. Some of them are detailed, some are not, and I will update them. A question? Okay, so the question was a core document isn't opening. I'll check on it. Because I did some cleanup, so I may have deleted it during my cleanup. So I'll check it. But there will be changes to this year's anyway, because since we're gonna set more time for the testing, there will be a little bit less time on one of the other topics. So we modify a little bit. But I can upload so at least it's there. Because the idea is that to guide you. We have a number of topics. Some are important, some are not so important. And from dipped in my talking, it may not always be easy to see which is more or less important. So that's what's there. But thank you for the feedback. We'll make sure that it's there. Learning materials. This is also going to be updated. So there are some links to systems and tools you're going to be using, and some of the tutorials. Previous exams, we haven't uploaded the last exams yet, or the recent exam, but you find the previous exams here, the exam, and with the suggested solution. Don't look at the suggested solution until you've tried yourself. We'll come back to this later on. The assignments, and here you need to sign up, and the first assignment is out, and you can start working on it. The teaching assistants will be available in the labs from now on. And here is the lectures. There is, unfortunately, the problem I said is if I try to click on this one, I, by some reason, don't get the whole document, just a part of it. So there's something going on. So I need to talk to the Blackboard administrators to see what's wrong with the... Because the document is there, so I can find it if I just look at the document for myself, but somehow it's crashing when we try to... Yes, so that's it. So I... if you have any questions for... A question? Okay. Works in another browser. Okay. And it works if I upload it differently. So it's just when this link. So, but I'll talk to them and we'll find a way around it. But right now I don't know what it is. It's been working, and I tried this morning. It was working. DipTest had been working. So we'll find a way. But right now, sorry. Before we take a break, let's go a little bit into the. The real thing here, databases and their use in applications and in various systems. So you probably know where the databases are being used everywhere. It's I don't know why, but I sometimes get feedback from students saying that wonder why I'm so enthusiastic about databases because it's so boring. I don't know how you could say it's boring. It's everywhere, and there are a number of interesting problems, interesting new uses, interesting new challenges related to databases. So, but some think this is boring, old-fashioned, boring stuff. But if you look at the industry, you find databases everywhere. So For instance, obviously banks, how could they keep track of accounts without having a database for it and be able to combine queries, run reports, run analysis, and shops, knowing what they have in store, knowing the prices, travel industry, hotel prices, what are available, air tickets, warehouses, keeping track of huge amounts of goods of some sort. But not just there, technology systems, the mobile phone system. There are two big databases being used whenever you use your mobile phone. One is called the Home Location Registry. It's where you have your subscription. It knows your subscription plan. It knows everything about where to send the bill. And this is the part that keeps your data, your subscriber data. But when you're out traveling, you go to Greece, then they need to know who you are and what you're entitled to. And there's another database for all the visitors. So in that database, they keep track of whoever is in the country right now. Some of them may be their own customers, some may be other customers. In system management, you have a complex technical system. You need to know what are the parts, what is the maintenance history, what are the alarms in a big system. For safety and security, you have these DNA databases. When criminals get caught and you get their DNA profile, you store it in a database. They can be used. You have surveillance systems, registering who entered the building, who left the building, what did they do, or what rooms did they enter, if GDPR allows you to. Criminal investigation, where you have huge databases that the FBI and other, the Interpol, they share databases of both on criminals and, of course, on various cases. Computer games, obviously the MMOs, where lots of users are playing towards one system. But also in smaller systems, you have preference and activity logs. You would like to log what's happening in the game for the improvement of the game and for adapting the game to the user. And these are places where databases come in. And then, of course, on the internet, Google. Probably it is definitely one of the largest databases on Earth. It's not a relational. We'll talk a little bit about it later on. And then Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, this Easy Publish, and the WordPress, the CMSs. They're all storing data in databases. The interesting thing is that they are not using just one database. They typically use a number of different databases, different systems, that have different benefits and strengths, and they also store the data in regular flat files. And more, many, 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 many more systems. I think we'll just take the break there, and then we'll go into and see what differs a database system from the traditional, more file-based approach. So I think we'll take a break there, and hopefully I can get the computer back screen instead. Thanks. Okay. I had some good questions during the break, and I see right away that there are some clarifications to make to what I already said. First of all, I got one comment about the assignment text. I'll modify it to make it even clearer. Number two, the rumors from last year is that the first assignment is really bad, really terrible, a lot of things to do and messy. I've tried to clean it up a little bit. That's the first comment. The other comment is that there are a number of tools and tutorials you need to go through. You'll find the assignment has many pages, many steps, so things to do. Now, is that good or bad? Well, of course, there's a lot of things for you to do. The good thing about it is that welcome to the world of programming. So when you work, when you are out there in a company and a customer comes in and has some requirements using a new set of tools, a different database, you just have to learn it on the job. So yes, it is messy. Yes, there are lots of things to do, but this is the industry you're moving into. So use this opportunity to get exposed to see how well you deal with a number of different tools that you don't know, that you need to get a grasp on yourself. And then we have the TAs to help you. As I said, this year I'm going to spend more time on the testing and the platform and the whole stack in the lectures. We have one more week this year than we did last year, so don't be too frightened by what the last year students say. Experience yourself, because I think this is a very relevant exercise, a very relevant assignment, because you need to get to understand a new set of tools. You are developing a database. You do get your first experience with automated testing, which is terribly important when you're out in industry. So do this. I really recommend doing it. And then there was a question about when are the hand-ins? So I didn't say that, but our setup is like this. We are week 34, and if you look at the week numbers, the 9th of September is week 36. On the Sunday, before midnight, so that means 23:59. By that time, you need to hand in your reports. And then it's 38, it's 40, 42, 44, and the last one, 46. So every 2 weeks, except for the first one, since there are so many tools, you get more time. And the question is, can we start right away, even though there are no lab hours until a bit later? Oh, yes, start right away. If you have problems with the technology, and it's likely that some of you will get into some problems, we may talk about it here in the lectures, but I encourage you to go to the lab hours, because the TAs there, they have went through this themselves, and they know, hopefully, they've seen the problem before, and they can help you quickly, because some of these problems are known problems. Now, there is an ideal world, and there's a real world, and we live in the real world. So if you know that here you need to go on a job trip or something happens, or if you here find that you are sick, what then? These deadlines are not in stone. They are not there to make it hard for you to come to the exam or be able to get to the exam. They are here to help spread out the workload for you and for the TAs and for everyone. So if you see in advance that something will happen, then tell me. I'm quite good extending deadlines if there are good reasons for it. I'm not very tolerant. If you come here and you try to submit the day after and it's locked, if you haven't told me up front, I won't let you in. It's that easy. I mean, if you have problems, you should know in advance, and you let me know. So if you see that you're going to be on a trip, or if you see that, or once you get sick, of course, we will find alternative dates. Just keep in mind that there is a limit. I mean, you can't push everything here. There is a final date here where I need to tell the exam office who have 5 out of 6 approved. And that date I cannot change. So there is a final. If you can't do it before that, then of course you have to try it again next year. The other thing is you need to choose your group no later than the Sunday. What do I mean by that? Well, if you by some reason, I don't recommend doing so, but if you by some reason are guessing that 5 out of 6, I'm going to do these 5, I'm going to skip the first one. You could do so. You can gamble on that these are easy and learning and good ones, and you're going to pass all of them. I would still want to know what group you are on. So if you are as an individual or as a group, you would like to submit or you would like to be part of this, but you're not going to do the first one, then you will still have to enroll in the group by the 9th of September. But if you already know who you're going to be with, as soon as possible, you can just register in the group. You don't have to wait till the 9th. But all groups, even if you don't plan on submitting the first, all groups should be registered or enrolled by that. Was it clear? Good. And an additional. So our objective, our goal is that then the weeks in between, okay, let's use red instead. The weeks, the odd number weeks, are the weeks where you get the feedback from the TAs. So the TAs, I tell them that they have 1 week to go through all the reports and give you feedback. So you submit here, week 36, and Monday morning, and then week 38, by end of week 37, the TA's feedback should be there. If they are not able to, our agreement is that they tell me, and I will let you know that it's going to be late this time. But hopefully it's not going to happen. Sounds okay? Yeah. Okay, so let's go to the database. So this is what they are being used for. Now let's go into what they really are. And databases, when we start talking about databases, it's always good to compare and look at the alternative. So you were all doing through the last year and programmed the file-based system. So you had some records on the file and read data from the file, didn't you? Yeah, so you know that already. So that was the world before 1960. Everyone would write their own data in files. So you could do that, of course. So here, typically then, you have a sales department, and they have their applications. So this is the example from a textbook. So this is, you can buy or lease houses. And this is a sales department that deals with what are the properties available for rent, who are the owners of these properties, and what are the clients who like to rent. So they know these are the ones who would like to rent, these are the owners, and these are the properties. And you have, of course, information related to each one of them. So for the property, you need to know the property number, where it is, how many rooms, what is the rent, and who is the owner. And the client, you need to know the name, the address, and what is the preferred type of property, because the type is here. What's the max rent that can match up the rent? Okay, so after you make the sale, then the contract department will start making the contract. So, but the contracts department also needs to have files. It needs to know what are the current leases, the number of the lease, what is the property, who is leasing there, how much is it paid, how do they pay, when does it start, or the period, the renting, start and end dates for rent, and the duration of the lease. And of course, they also need to know about the properties, the number, street address, the postal code, and the rent. And they need to know information about the clients, you can reach them. Okay. So one thing that's striking here is that both
these applications, the sales application and the contracts application, they obviously need to have interfaces where the workers, those working in sales department and the contracts department, they can enter data and they can generate reports, and those will be specific. I mean, they have different jobs, so they have different interfaces and different needs. And then there is a need for routines for file handling. I mean, you already see that. You need to open the file, you need to close the file, you need to write to the file, you need to seek in the file. All these operations are general file handling routines. And you also need to know the structure of the file. How is it laid out? Is it fixed size records? Is it variable size records? What order are the attributes written to the file? What is the format of integers? What is the format of the various fields? All of that need to be defined here, and the programs need to know, because you're reading basically bytes from a file and need to understand what these bytes mean. And for that you need the file definition and you need all these functions to read and write and operate on files. That's going to be replicated in the application programs. And what are the problems? One of the problems is the dependency, the data dependency. So the structure of the files depends on the program. So here, for instance, the sales department has property for rent that has the type and the number of rooms, because you need that for the sales. But the contracts department, they don't need that, so they have a different structure. So the structure of the file depends on whether it's the sales department or it's the contracts department. They have different file definitions and they have different files, which means that if you are to develop a new application and you like to have data, then you need to understand the structure of that specific file. Or if you would like to change the file structure, you would also need to change the applications. So there's a tight coupling between the data structure on the file and the data structure or on the program that operates on the file. Because of this, the size of the program and the complexity of the program increases. Now, this is a simple case. Each department has their own files. But now, you find that sometimes it's the sales guys need to know that client. Does he already lease something? So he needs access to these files. How do you do that? Two different systems. You need data from both. Then all of a sudden, you need to share, or if two people in the contracts department start working on the same property, what's going to happen then if two tries to sign two different contracts to the same property? Then you start having inconsistencies. The same property is leased to two different people. So you need mechanisms to ensure that data can be accessed across departments. You need to make sure that multiple users can't mess up. And if you need to implement all that functionality in here, in the file handling routines, this part of the software gets terribly big. This part here that has to do with file handling routines, it's getting big, and this part is actually the part that is useful to the end user, meaning that that's how they can see all the houses, all the leases, everything. That's going to be small compared to the other part. And the worst thing for a database person is the fact that the same data is may be stored several places. Why is that bad? Well, partly because we're wasting data. So, I mean, here, the same property needs to be here and here. And the street number, the address, and the rent would be the same. The client, the name and address, telephone number, is going to be in two places. So in two files, we have the same information. It's wasting data, but these days, I mean, we have
gigabytes, terabytes, hexabytes. So data, wasting data is not necessarily a big problem in its own right. But inconsistencies would be. What do we mean by inconsistency? What's happening then if a user or a client calls the sales department and says, I changed my phone number. Okay, so he modified his phone number. But he didn't tell the contract department, and he is in the contract. So depending on whether we find this record or this record, we find different phone numbers. So we can't trust our data anymore, because in two different places in our system, we have two different pieces of information, and we don't know which is right, which is wrong. So data consistency, we're going to talk a lot about that. Data consistency is the most important, or one of the most important features of our database system. And in the old-fashioned file-based systems, we couldn't guarantee this, unless you really made the file handling routines huge, that took that into account as well. That means that the file definition here needs to know about the files here, and vice versa, and it needs to know that there are links here between different files, and it makes this terribly complex. And data is not isolated. You can't find data one place, and you could use it for all the applications. It's going to be tightly integrated into the applications. So if you now here have a new department, let's say we have a partnership with a surveillance company or a security company. So we can, these here, some of them may have contracts with a security company, and they're going to have a discount because we sell them security at the same here. So we need a new application. Okay, now we need to replicate the client information again, and the property information, because these clients, they lease some of these properties. And the owner will be the one who agrees on installing the system. So all of a sudden, the third application, we need to replicate all this data again. We need to build up, and we need to create all these new file handling routines, and we need to define the new file structures. So it's a lot of work to add one new application, even though the data is already there. We need a little bit of new data, but that's most of the work is to deal with the data that's already in the system. And formats might be incompatible. In old days, characters, texts were hard. I mean, if you had the American or the English alphabet, it's fine. Once you get into Norwegian or Greek or some other character sets, each system had their own way to encode it. So if you got a file with text from a Mac and you will have to see it on a Windows machine or a Linux machine, text will be all messed up if you were trying to see some of the non-English characters. Same with binary files. So if you have binary files, picture files, maybe stored differently on the different systems. Querying. In the file-based system, if you go here, you have the data entry and reports. These are fixed. You know what these salespeople need and the contracts people need. Now, what then if a manager needs a report that's not already in the system? What can he do? Well, you need to get the programmer that could go in here and program and use the file handling routines. Maybe they need a new file handling routine to find exactly the data they need. So there's a lot of work. In database systems, you have ad hoc querying. So Dipti is going to talk about SQL. I'm going to talk about XPath. These are ad hoc languages that you can use to get any type of data from the existing database without having to program and change the application program. And we already talked about the multi-user support. What now if two users would like to update, or how do we make this secure? How can we ensure that only some people, if it's a file, how do you make it so that only some would have access to the file? Not everyone having this access to the server can access the files. You want to limit. So let's say that you would like to limit so that some customers can only be dealt with a special agent. You say, okay, these are important customers, and the important customers are going to be served by one agent. We can't do that here. We can set up advanced mechanisms for security or for integrity, meaning that here in the file-based system, it is possible to have two different telephone numbers for the same client. There is no mechanism for dealing with that. And in this case, you need to lock the file, so only one can access the file at a time, which means that if you have many agents working on the same file, they will have to wait till the current agent is finished with the file, unless you have some very advanced mechanisms to ensure that files can be updated at several places at the same time. So this is the motivation for a database system. You probably are aware of or see that from before, but it's important to keep these, I group them into different types of problems. It's important to keep these problems in mind, because when we look at the database system architecture, we're going to see that there are services implemented to support all of these limitations or challenges to overcome them. So, database. Using a database, that's the favorite approach. In the break, I had a question: what's the difference between a database and a data structure? Is there a fuzzy line between the two? And I would say that it's not, because a database, in definition, is a collection of logically related data. So when we talk about a database, we talk about a collection of data. So if you look at this case, so a database here would be a collection of the property for rent, private owner, client, and lease data. All the data and the description of the data structure collectively constitute a database. There will be data structures, of course, for each of these files, but a database is more. A database is also is the collection of files and the data structure, and it's a description of it. So in a database, we have what's called a system catalog or a dictionary that is storing the data structure, how the data structure looks like, stores the format. So whenever we get a database, we don't have to go into the files to try to see what's there. We can just ask the system catalog, the dictionary. I'm sorry, I'm going to use these terms, kind of both terms, and they mean the same thing. Dictionary, system catalog. Whether it's a dictionary catalog, I guess it's British or American maybe origin for the two names. But it's basically a list of what are all the tables, and what are all the attributes, and what are all the structure of the database. So the metadata is a description of the data structures. For each of the in the collection, there is a data structure for the whole collection, there is a data structure within each type of data, but the data structure is just a part of a database. The database is also all the data and the metadata that describes the format. And that's very important, because if you get a file, you need to know the file structure. But if you get a database, you can ask the database, what is the structure here? What are the tables here? What are the users here? And you can get that if you have the right permissions for asking. So, and the reason for it is that, as we said, there was this high coupling between data and programs, and there were weak access and permission control, not much security. So to overcome these problems, and all the other weaknesses we talked about, these were problems that you would like to overcome. And the way to overcome this is to have what's called a database management system. So what's going to happen is that in the old, you have your applications here, and you have your files here. So you could access your files directly. Now, what's going to happen now is that with the database, we say there is no direct link there. there is a database management system, stores everything in files, of course. Data needs to be stored on the disk. So in the end, there will be files. So here, there will be lots of files for each of the types of data we have here. And there will be some files, we'll show it in the picture later on, some files that is the data dictionary or the catalog, which describes what are these files and what's the content of these files. So that when you access data, you say to the database, I need these data. And then the database system, management system, is going to go to the database, look up the right files, get the right data, and format it according to the instructions that are here, and even let the user know, the application know, what is in this database. What is the format? What kind of response can you expect when I give you the data? In a relational database, data will be returned as tables. And we use SQL to query, and we get results in forms of tables. Tabular data. And some of these tables may describe what's in the tables. It's all tabular. And that's the new thing here. We actually can ask the database, what can I expect? And it's all going to look the same. So there's no need for any file mechanisms, knowing anything about the file structure. Database management system is keeping track of that. You don't need, in the application, no need to worry about whether there are multiple users. The database management system is going to keep track of that. You're going to have to log in, so security is managed here. And if you design, like Dipti will tell you, if you design the database properly, you can't have the same data stored several places. You rather link them together and making sure that they are not inconsistent. And typically, this will be on a separate server. So typically, you will have your application on your PC or your Mac, and you will have your database server hosted somewhere out in the cloud. And then the file system is typically attached to that, administered by the database system. But when we use XAMPP, we're going to install the database management system on the local machine. So it's all going to be in your one computer. It's a server, yes, but it's not a physical one. It runs as a process, server process, inside your computer. Was that clear? Only partly? So what we're going to be experiencing now is that when we write this in assignment one, when we write the app, right now data is stored locally on the web server. But you're going to start changing that program so it will store data in the database instead, which means that you need to connect to the database system. You need to pass data to the database system. You need to get data from the database system and format it and put it onto the web page where before the data was just stored locally on the web server. And hopefully that will help you understand this picture. We're going to draw this quite a few times in the next couple of weeks. So this is how the database works like. So as I was drawing here, all of a sudden now the database management system is coming in between. So applications, they still need the data entry and reports, but you don't need to know anything about file structure. You don't need any specific operations for accessing file data. You just need to say to the database, this is what I want, and you get it. And you know that it's always going to be a table. Everything you get back is going to be a table. So if you can deal with a table, so the only one data structure you need to know about is the table structure. It has rows and columns. And with that, you can get all you need. All the data will be, the DBMS will take whatever data it has and put it into the table format, and you get the table back. That's how you get it. So you don't have to worry about how these files are accessed. What's the structure to make it efficient to find one entry in 20 million entry or record file. So if let's say you have 20 million records of some sort and you're going to find one, you don't have to worry about how to make that efficient here. You just tell the database. And the database management system will have its way to make that efficient. It has all the data structure in there. So now you have the four tables. And they are the same ones for both departments. So there is only one property for rent. There is only one client table here that has all the data we need, which means that if we modify the telephone number, it's only one place. So if someone calls the sales department, you modify the telephone number, it's going to be updated for the contracts departments as well. All the data is here. Database management system is responsible for reading the files and getting data out of files and return it to the client. This part, the metadata part, is where the data dictionary is. The data dictionary, what is the content? Well, if you query the database, you will get a table. And the table would be, there will be one table for all tables. What are all the tables in this database? There's one table for property, one table for private owner, one table for client, one table for lease. Okay. Now you can ask, what are the columns or the attributes of each of these tables? And it will say, okay, in the property for rent table, you have the property number, the street, city, it will tell you all of this. In the table form, and we'll look at it later on. We're going to go through the, hopefully I get to run MySQL on my machine and show it to you on Friday. And then we'll see how you can actually go into the system catalog to see what is in the various databases. You don't need to look at the files to figure out. So, what is then the environment of that of a database? First of all, you have the data. So a data is a database is a collection of data and metadata that is logically related, which means that that's another thing to think about. On one database management system, you may have many databases. It may administer many databases. So this might be, so if you think about this this company, it may have different services. So it's one database for houses for rent. There's one database for, what would I know, maybe they provide services for gardening. They may have one gardening service. They may have some other services, and they have one database for each. It can be inside one and the same database management system. Database management system can say what users can access this database, what users can access this, and what users can access this database. And it will tell you all the details. So one database management system can manage and administer many databases at the same time. So it's not like there is one database. So if you install your example on your machine and you get MySQL or actually MariaDB, then you don't have one database. You have one database management system, but it has many databases. So if you look inside, you'll find that there is a test database and other databases. And in the assignments, you're going to create two databases. One that you're going to use for your app, and one that you're going to use for testing your app. Two databases, meaning two different collections of data, two different sets of tables, although in this case, they're going to be look the same, all administered by the same database management system. But there is also hardware, as we were saying. The database management system needs to run somewhere. It could be your own computer, or it could be a separate server. You need the operating system. You need networking support, networking software, because the database needs to get files, maybe from a file server. And it might be in several databases running together in a distributed system. And you have the application programs over here. So it's quite, compared to last year where you programmed one small file that accessed, one small program that accessed files, now you have a world of many components. And that's why the first assignment is a bit of a step up. You need to try to get familiar with all these technologies and the servers and get it up and running. But the good thing is that once you get past that, you get a much better understanding of what these database applications may look like, and you can contribute to this exciting world of network and database services. We also have people. I'm going to talk a little bit about various peoples, people involved in various roles, and procedures. You may need procedures. You need procedures for the design. How are you going to be deploying, meaning when you make a fix to the database, you extend the database, when are you going to roll it out? You need procedures for that, you need procedures for design. So there are a lot of procedure. You did have software engineering already with Tom, didn't you? So we talked a little bit about all these things here. This links very much to the software engineering. And the roles here, of course, would be the end users. I say naive and sophisticated. And when we start talking about security, we need to think about the sophisticated users, because they may try to really break into and do bad stuff with our system. But some of them are just end users getting data. We have the programmers. Quite a few of you will be the programmers, either writing application programs or actually designing and setting up the database, both logically, which means designing, like Dipti will do in the first step, is design what should be the data, what should be the, how is data linked, and then in the end you need to create actual tables and maybe some indexes that I will talk about later in the course. And then you have the administrators. You have a database administrator, which would typically be the one that administers the technical system. Make sure that the DBMS is upgraded to the latest version, make sure that files are backed up, working on the technical system. Make sure that new users are created, make sure that access policies are implemented. And then you have the data administrators. And the data administrators, those are responsible for the actual data in here. So this is a kind of an overlooked type of role. Not many companies do have data administrators. Those who do are typically those that are into more archiving. So libraries or like the Norwegian News Agency. We were talking to the Norwegian News Agency, and they have thesaurus, if you want, as a set of terms they use to describe the content of pictures that they use. And to make sure that that thesaurus is extended in a good way, managed in a good way, they do have data administrators. They only worry about what the quality of data inside database, nothing about the technical. So this is something to worry about, because, as I said, the quality of a database is very much dependent on the quality of the data. So worry about the data quality, not just the technical quality, is important. First generation database systems. In the 1960s, they were file-based, but they did provide services that would help you access the files. So it would still be navigational, you will still be had to know about the files, but they removed some of the file operations into the database management system, so the applications didn't have to work with all of it. Then the big breakthrough was in the 70s, when you had the first database management systems that would have a standard data structure to show to you. There were two. One was a tree-based one, similar to XML, so everything was organized in trees, and the application would only need to know that there's a root, and from the root I can find all the children, and I can go to the children's children. You can browse up and down. You're going to have algorithmic methods this semester, and tree and graph traversal is something that you're going to be working on, and here you would need that. The tree structure you would need to in the DBMS, it will allow you to traverse the trees. And the network structure is a graph, so it will enable you traversing graphs. But still, you will need to traverse. It was navigational. You had no means for asking ad hoc queries. You would have to write a program that would traverse the tree structure or the graph structure. But that structure was described in a file-independent way. So the database system would provide you a memory representation of a graph or of a tree, and it would keep or implement all the file access methods here. The third generation, again, new step, is the relational database. That's what we're going to focus mostly on. And in the relational database, everything is a table. So relation means table in this case. So a relational database is a collection of relations. A relation is actually a table if you look at it. Then the world become tables with some additional sugar that we needed for to be able to link various parts of the data together. Fourth generation started in the 90s with object databases, but now you have many more. These are the NoSQL. If you heard the term NoSQL, is that familiar? It doesn't mean NoSQL, it means not only SQL, by the way. It started as being no, but then they found that, okay, sometimes SQL may be good in here as well, but it's not only SQL. So these are the, we'll talk a little bit about them eventually, but these are the big table that Google is using, key value stores, which would be the simplest way to store data in the database. You have document databases that are kind of back to the future, kind of. These are the hierarchical databases reinventing themselves. But now the difference is that you do have ad hoc query languages. As I said, in the XML part, we'll talk about XPath. And XPath is an example of how you could query a document database. Graph databases are kind of back to the network databases that were up here. And yes, you can still traverse, but you can also query. There are different query languages, ad hoc query languages, in which you specify parts of a graph, and it will start looking for where can I find that part of the graph matching the real graph. So this is an, quite a long history and quite an exciting world. There are lots of things happening, I was attending a PhD defense in, I would say that was probably 93, 94, and then object-oriented databases were good, and the candidate was saying that in a few years you wouldn't see relational databases on the market anymore. I don't know, they are still here, I think, and it's not that the relational database is answer to everything, and it's being used in places where other alternatives are better, but it's still so important. I think knowing it is very good, and knowing its limitation is also good, because it's not always the answer. So in your let's say in your bachelor thesis, you're most likely going to have a database. Whether the relational database is the right answer is questionable. It might be MongoDB, might be Neo4j, might be some other database that is more appropriate, but it will be a database, and you will be able to use some of the knowledge that we had here. Yeah. So these are reinventing themselves. Databases. Dipti is going to come back to that. We talk about two different types of languages. We talk about the manipulation language. The manipulation language is the one that modifies the content of your database. The DDL, the definition language, will modify the structure, which means it modifies the metadata, the dictionary data. The system catalog, on Friday when I get my machine up and running, we're going to have a look at it. And it has mechanisms for controlling the quality of data. In this case, how to get into, make sure that data is consistent, make sure that the system can come back again if you have a failure. If the disk crashes, you would like to have the database back in operation. And you would like to be able to have multiple users. We're going to end with this slide. And I'm going to be showing it a few more times. But it just gives you a kind of an idea what this beast, the DBMS, really is and what type of services it provides. So for an application programmer, you will be writing SQL queries, and SQL queries will be queries for getting data or inserting data. The query processor is the one that makes sure that your query is actually executed on the database. It's using the data dictionary to get to understand how the database looks like. It's going to the database manager to say, I need this data. Database manager doesn't know how the file looks like, so you would ask the file manager. The file manager needs to know, okay, what is the way the file is structured. And there are some system buffers here to make efficient use of the resources. So this is the way through. When you are a DBA or a developer, sometimes you create a new table and you create a new schema. You provide SQL operations for creating a schema.
And the schema obviously will change the dictionary, and it's written to the metadata. Sorry.
Okay, so we'll talk more about all these later on. And on Friday, we'll hopefully get time to get a little bit into the environment that you're going to be using for the first assignment.
Forelesningsplan hvor du har den uka og på den uka det forventer at du har lest fra den siden frem til den siden. Jeg har sett den totale lista av
ja, nei, vi viktig og ikke ja, viktig, men jeg har ikke.
Okay.